From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 22nd day of September 2017, the autumnal equinox. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. If you can stay with us for the whole of the hour, you'll hear all of Commodity Week with our panelists Pete Manhart, Kurt Kimmel, Wayne Nelson, and Merrill Crowley. If not, it's already up online at willag.org, or will air on many of these radio stations over the weekend. We'll also talk with Eric Snodgrass today. He's at Agribull and will help us take a look at the weather forecast here at Maria in the Atlantic Ocean, and then what's happening in South America. And it all happens on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
We're joined now by Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting in Atchison, Kansas for the afternoon. Hey, Mike, thanks for being with us. Did you get a chance to see the cattle and feed numbers as they came out from USDA a few minutes ago?
Yes, I did. They weren't pretty, especially given the fact that we rallied almost $7 in the feeders. Feeders look pretty tough opening Monday. I would not be surprised to see a limit down move on Monday, given the fact that on feed, September 1 was 104%, top end of the range. Placements, 103%. That's only 1% away from the top end of the range. That's the big number for me, placements during August at that high of a level. I think the trade was probably expecting something closer to below 95%, certainly below 100%, I think is what the trade was talking about. Marketings came in strong, 106%. That was about 1% away from the top end of the range. So feeders look like they got the short end of the stick. Wouldn't be surprised to see the funds buy fats and sell feeders, and would watch that flat price on the feeder cattle, as I said.
I want to roll this into the conversation about the grains. We'll get to the soybeans in just a moment, but the grain stocks report is due out next Friday. Do you think livestock will show bigger usage than expected for the year or not?
They should. I mean, this is one of those things that's almost a regular occurrence we talk about before a September or before a December grain stocks report for the last several years, Todd. I would say they should, because of the high dress weights and these very large numbers that we've been slaughtering for the past 3 to 4 months. And I am not alone in thinking that we've been holding back on heavier feed and residual usage for the past 8 to 9 months. And so I think they ought to be looking at that. And I think they ought to be looking at the ethanol market as well, especially in light of the hurricanes. We have, I think, a lot of pent-up crushing coming in ethanol because our unleaded stocks are so low. We need to refine more unleaded gas before wintertime, or we'll draw down our stocks too much before springtime. So I think that the corn side of the equation should be every bit as supported on the demand side as the soybean side of the equation. The biggest question mark, or the biggest maybe weak issue going into the stocks report, could be the wheat, because we have not seen that export pace pick up as much as I'd like to see.
So you've been talking a little bit about both the grain stocks number and the WASDE after that, the October number. What do you think that consumption number will look like? Or better yet, what do you think the ending stocks for 17-18 for corn will change, or how much?
Yeah, I still think that we should be below 2 billion. I still think that, because of the way that my yield model is based upon customer survey and state-based yields and crop conditions, and then I derive those two things into a national yield, I could go as low as 1.7 billion bushels on 17-18 corn when it comes to both the yield and the demand we're talking about.
And then, given the export market we've seen for soybeans and the yields that we've been hearing for soybeans, what do you see there?
They're helping to offset each other. There's no question about it. The producers are very, very thankful for the yield so far in the early beans. Many producers I've spoken with, probably you too, are saying I'm worried that they're not going to hold up as well in my later beans. But right now they're coming on strong. I think the other added bonus we have is the South American weather. One of the things that I think helped promote this type of a break above the 200-day moving average in beans, first time since July 31st, was the fact that not only did we have wheat and corn supporting earlier this week, We also continue to see maybe the market not get the rains they expect in Brazil. Mato Grosso, Mato Grosso do Sul, the afternoon maps, or the noontime maps, I should say, especially on the European updates, did not come out as supportive for rainfall next week. And I think the trade's starting to get more and more cautious about wanting to pull beans down before the Brazilians get planted, because this issue, as we go into late September, becomes more and more critical to get those beans in the ground.
Have you heard any indication out of Iowa that their bean crop has suffered far more than the corn crop? And the corn crop looks pretty good, or at least on USDA's numbers. So does the soybean crop, for that matter. But August and September were both dry.
Yes, I haven't heard any big distinction between corn and beans in Iowa, but I can say that for both of them, I have heard, as you go across the Missouri-Iowa border into the Kansas-Nebraska border, that's some of the driest areas that we've seen since March. And both of those sections of those four states are seeing some pretty dire yield numbers early on here.
Right. So USDA did peg those and has for quite some time. They, I think, in both the weekly crop progress reports and in their crop production numbers. But I'm thinking through the heart of Iowa. Is there any concern there at all?
I haven't heard anything as much yet, Todd. There may be. I just haven't talked to a lot of folks that are harvesting right now in Iowa.
What's the potential for follow-up Monday on the soybean to the upside?
Well, I think, you know, we dealt with the North Korean news very, very well. And the question is, why is that? Well, I think this new threat is not rattling the market because China is pushing these more severe sanctions that we threw out yesterday. That's the Central Bank of China told its banks, do not lend money to North Korea. And that was a big, big issue with the United States that China followed up with. So I think we really do still have North Korea as the biggest feature to potentially thwarting the run-up. I would like to see, I saw spring wheat come on real nicely this week. I saw crude oil come on real nicely. I think the index funds are coming back in. I'd like to see a continuation of that wheat, soft red wheat especially, come in and support the beans next week, especially given these reports we're going into.
Well, tell me a bit more about that, please.
You know, this is where I'm at with the wheat market and the soybeans. This 980 level was a critical level to close above and be able to get a continued momentum built to keep covering shorts in the soybeans and actually add to longs. I think you're going to need the funds. And one thing that the wheat represents and the crude oil represents really well is the United States dollar, the crude oil market itself, and also the Russian ruble. And that was one of the big things that I saw later in the week that really pulled back the bullishness in the wheat, in my view, was the Russian ruble started to find a little bit more weakness against the U.S. dollar. And I think these are things that the funds are really trading off of right now. One of my colleagues in Chicago talked about the algo traders really working today, and it makes sense because of the spread action.
Hey, thanks so much. We appreciate you taking so much time with us today.
My pleasure, and happy equinox.
Oh, same to you. Thanks so much, Mike. That's Mike Zuzulow. He's at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting in Atchison, Kansas. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason on this 22nd day of September. It's the equinox. That means we have the same number of daylight hours and dark hours. We're now joined by meteorologist Eric Snodgrass from Agribulm to talk about the equinox and all the things that come along with it as we move into fall. Hey, Eric, thanks so much for being here today.
Yeah, thank you. Well, I think you're right about the equinox. It's an interesting day because while everywhere on the planet has 12 hours of daylight and 12 hours of darkness, there are two locations that don't, and that is the North and South Pole. And so if you lived on the North Pole, this is a pretty depressing day because the sun sets and it's not going to rise again there for 6 months. So it's just amazing to watch how dynamic of a planet we have. But yeah, after today, we have more nighttime hours than we do daytime hours. But you wouldn't really think it, would you, given all the heat that we've just had recently? This pattern and its shift has been incredible. We've been talking about it now for about 10 days. And deep trough out west, big broad ridge over the east, and our normal high temperatures for this time of year are middle 70s. And we've been reaching into the middle 90s, which means we've had about 20 degrees warmer than average. So this is certainly not feeling anything like the start of fall. But I'll tell you something, this pattern can be causing some major issues for the Central Plains. Basically, as that ridge continues to occupy the kind of the eastern two-thirds of the country, it spins broadly in a big clockwise fashion. So you can kind of imagine that with me. And what's going to happen is that trough slowly moving east, and out ahead of it, it's going to produce this broad area of lower atmospheric pressure. And all of that spells from basically Texas to Minnesota. The next 5 days are going to be very, very wet. So the Central Plains are going to get dumped on in terms of rain. While we here in Illinois and in the eastern Corn Belt, we're going to be still under the influence of that ridge, meaning our temperatures are going to stay in the low 90s, upper 80s, all the way through the start of next week. In fact, I don't see that pattern breaking down until we get to midweek next week when that trough finally tries to move through our area. And what that means is maybe the last couple of days of September, maybe the first couple of days of October could be near average or cooler than average, which I think a lot of us would welcome. But it looks as though as we get into October, the ridge is going to reestablish itself back into the central part of the country, which basically means, you know, we're not yet ready to be talking about an early frost threat again, basically due to this pattern. So, yeah, it's interesting. It's keeping us dry, and it's going to make those folks to our west quite wet in the coming days.
So you mentioned the frost talk. We had a lot of that during the summer months as it was fairly cool the beginning of September. You and most of the rest of all the rest of our meteorologists said, hey, look, there's no correlation between an early frost and temperatures, certainly during the midsummer time. Will we be normal or late, do you think, at this point then?
Well, what I'm concerned about is we've got a pretty active jet stream right now. But other than the fact that it's a little bit blocked up now, it tends to keep getting blocked in a favor that's bringing us some late summer, now early fall heat. So, you know, if you made me kind of pin it down, you know, our average frost date is around mid-October. I mean, if we reestablish a ridge back across the central part of the country, that could push us to a late October, early November frost. Now, of course, there's a lot of uncertainty with that, but that, you know, that would be the thing I'd be looking out for a lot of folks that are farming in the Midwest.
Let's look further to the east. Hurricane season is still with us, and there are more in the Atlantic. Tell me about Maria.
Yeah, so Maria really wiped out Puerto Rico, and I'm sure everybody's been hearing about the news there, but basically knocked the power out of the whole island. I mean, it's amazing to think about what a direct hit from a Cat 4 hurricane can do. From a meteorologic perspective, it was absolutely fascinating to see this, but from a human perspective, it's been bad. And everyone wants to know, where's Maria going next? It's made a little bit of a slight turn to the north, and that's where we expect it to continue. So it's going to miss Florida. Thank goodness for that. There's some uncertainty at about day 5 or 6. So we're talking next week as to whether or not Maria may touch the Cape Hatteras area, North Carolina. Best model consensus at this point kind of points to the fact that a weak trough coming through the southeast combined with a decaying Hurricane Jose is going to help keep Maria out over the open ocean. The real thing here is how quickly will the trough that's going to come through us next week kick Maria out to open ocean and kind of spare the northeast from any troubles. So the next 5 days, certainly not going to be an impact of U.S. land, but beyond day 5, we're watching that one closely.
And finally, if I could get your assessment of weather conditions in Brazil as they get set for the beginning of their planting season.
Yeah, so they're wanting to plant right now. You know, the earlier they can get in, the better. And that's basically because that gives them a longer growing season for their safrinha crop. But there's been some delays due to some heat and dryness in Mato Grosso, kind of their biggest state in which they do their soybean planting. And it's been wet in parts of Argentina and very southern growing regions in Brazil. And basically what that spells is they've had a little bit of a delay. What they really do is they kind of wait until they get that first 2 to 3 inches of rain in the topsoil there, because always, you know, leading into the end of August and then, of course, September and the beginning of October, it's dry in the northern growing regions. That's just how it is. So they need to get 2 to 3 inches in there. And that's basically for, you know, getting the soybean plant to germinate well. So they're waiting on that. And the northern growing regions, I think, are going to have to wait to the beginning of October to get going. So that's a bit of a delay. I think the bigger picture for Brazil this year is, are we going to stay in this very, very weak La Nina? It's not even really a La Nina, but weak, you know, cool spell, and what that might mean for maybe potentially developing some drier conditions throughout the growing region. But that's a weak signal at this point, which means I think we're going to have to watch some other things as the season progresses. So delays to get things going, that's the big story right now.
Hey, Eric, thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you.
That's Eric Snodgrass. He is with Agrible.